Welcome to Ahead of the Game, a podcast brought to you by the Digital Marketing Institute. I'm your host, Will Francis, and in this episode, I'll be talking to Andrew Simon about mindfulness in the workplace, and specifically how he runs a program inside a large multinational to spread its benefits. Andrew's been at enterprise software giant SAP for 8 years in marketing and customer data solutions based in Montreal, Canada. Educated as an electrical engineer, he later realized how interested he was in marketing, enjoying the art and the science of our discipline. And as it happens, he's an alumnus of the DMI, having completed our Certified Digital Marketing Professional certification in 2020. And like I said, he runs a mindfulness program at SAP that's very successful. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Yourself?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm good. But of course, like anyone, I'm subject to all the normal pressures of work, right? And that's I think, something that you've been helping people with in your career. You've been with SAP for 8 years at this point, right?
Yeah, just about. It'll be 8 years in December.
But your role is sounds quite unconventional to me. I can't say I've met that many people in our industry who have this sort of secondary role as a coach and an ambassador. Just give us an overview of what you're doing there.
Yeah, so my core role within the company, I work in customer success. So SAP, for those who don't know, is a large enterprise resource platform and ERP company. And we also have CRM solutions. And I work in the area of customer success related to the CRM solutions, specifically around the marketing and technology products. So email marketing automation systems and CRM systems, CDP systems, things like this. But my side hustle, my side job, I'm an ambassador and a trainer related to mindfulness and emotional intelligence here within the company.
How did that come about? How did you find yourself doing that?
Yeah, well, about 5 years ago, I took a course here within SAP called Search Inside Yourself. It's a course that was developed at Google a long time ago that's merged into our way of working here at SAP. And after that course, I thought this was a really interesting set of information and topics and things that I wanted to talk more about. And I started to dig into mindfulness and emotional intelligence from there. And yeah, 5 years later, I'm training and coaching internal teams.
So what is your career path?
Yeah, so I graduated university with an electrical engineering degree many years ago now. And when I first started my career, I was in telecommunications technology and working to help customers who had problems with their cell phone service. Not the individuals, but the companies. And in that role, it was quite stressful because it was in those days, those early days of mobile and 3G, where things went wrong all the time. So I was part of teams that came into the office in the middle of the night to bring systems back up online. So like the whole city went down, this kind of thing. So that was part of the team that I was in. And I very quickly realized that we're not just fixing the problem itself, getting the cell phone service back up and running, but the people on the other end of the phone were really, really stressed. Their jobs were on the line, their manager's jobs were on the line, you know, those kinds of things. So I learned very quickly to also try to address the human emotional parts of that situation. Then from there, I worked in another smaller company, another software company in the HR space, and then joined SAP, as I said, about 8 years ago, all leading different teams in technology, consulting, product management, development, all kinds of things like this, all of them requiring some level of emotional intelligence, some level of working with people and teams. And then now, most recently, in the customer success space, my role is like a product manager with respect to marketing technology services. So it's been quite a journey. But throughout it all, there's been this theme of people as well as the technology. And that aspect of people as well as the technology is what's inspired me to work in this domain, this side hustle here at SAP.
At what point on that path did you first personally become aware of mindfulness as a thing? Is that something that's been a feature in your life for longer than you've been running the program?
Yeah. So it has, I'd say I came into mindfulness by way of emotional intelligence. And it actually started, my mother-in-law is a high school teacher. She's retired now, was a high school teacher. And she had a little seminar about emotional intelligence, self-awareness, self-management, and relationship management, empathy. And she told me about it over, Friday night dinner. And I thought, oh, this is cool. This is what I've been missing in working with the teams that I'm working in, where the language of emotional intelligence allows you to talk about these things that impact your work to help you be a more successful leader, to help you, engage with people a little bit more. And then the self-awareness piece, that first understanding what's going on inside of you, my head was always racing. I never really had the time to sit and think about that or notice that or cultivate that. When I joined SAP and I took this course, Search Inside Yourself, that's where I realized that the mindfulness piece is that component that I was missing, that ability to, quiet the mind a little bit, focus my attention on what I want to pay attention to. In that case, the emotions rolling around or the thoughts rolling around in my head, that's what I was missing. So it's still rather new for me, this concept of being mindful, being aware and conscious.
Yeah. Interesting. And you're on the podcast because you dropped us a line after hearing the episode where Catherine Mooney was talking about what she does and helping people in the massive tech company she works in on mental health and mental well-being, right?
Yeah. So I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller or texter into the podcast. So that's what happened. But that's what happened. Definitely. I listened to that podcast and I thought, wow, this is worlds colliding for me. The marketing technology that I'm working in, the emotional aspects that I do as a side hustle. And I thought, wow, I did not expect to hear that kind of topic on this podcast. And I thought, wow, how can I do more? How can I get involved? How can I, support all the marketers out there, everyone that's listening? And I wrote in and here I am.
That's great. So when you, like you say, this Search Inside Yourself, SIY, it's an initiative that was started by Google. And are you essentially kind of taking that set of principles and sort of training with them as is, or have you brought something of your own to that, and learnings about how that specifically applies within SAP?
Yeah, so because the SIY Global, the Search Inside Yourself Global organization, it's a public benefit corporation. And so what we've done within SAP is we take their material and we use it as close to the source as possible. The narratives and the stories that we tell as trainers when we're talking to the teams, that's where we put some nuance. That's where we add some flavoring to it. And we've also introduced some, say, practices at SAP that support the information that we share as part of the trainings.
Yeah. And because the whole idea of mindfulness, it comes out of obviously Eastern religious traditions, like particularly we associate that with Buddhism, right? And so I'm interested, to what extent does any element of spirituality remain in the mindfulness practice?
Yeah, so we take the source material as is to a large extent. Since we're doing this in corporate settings, it's completely secular. So there's no mention of religious connotations or mantras or anything like that.
Or even spiritual ones, because some people would say, obviously, spirituality is a separate thing.
Yeah, no, we take all of that out. We focus really on cultivating a culture of leadership, empathy, grounded in mindfulness and emotional intelligence. So we keep it to the science as much as we can.
Yeah, because obviously there's lots of research that shows the more that you take notice of what's happening in your mind, the more... Is it control that you're trying to develop there over your own mind?
So I wouldn't call it control. I would call it maybe management. So being aware. So the shortest version of being mindful is simply being aware. Aware of your thoughts and feelings, emotions, intuitions, you know, things like this, understanding what's going on. And then using that information in the workplace, in this context, but you could also take that anywhere. So it's managing that noise, understanding what's going on, and maybe even why it's happening to you.
Interesting. So just on a really kind of practical, at the desk level, what are the immediate benefits, do you think, of adopting some of those practices and techniques?
Yeah, well, from a mindfulness and emotional intelligence point of view, like you said, there's been a lot of studies. And some of those studies have shown you have a heightened sense of well-being in general by cultivating emotional intelligence. You can feel happier, lighter, you know, those kinds of the words to describe it. It's also been shown that by building emotional intelligence skills, again, rooted in mindfulness and awareness, you can have higher levels of performance. You can have higher degrees of leadership qualities. I mean, if you think about any leaders that you've known and you start to describe what those qualities were that made them great leaders, most of those descriptions will be around, you know, relationship building, trust, empathy. Yes, there'll be some things related to IQ or, you know, strategic thinking, but most of the time you're going to find that those elements are related to emotions. And that's why we're trying to train these skills.
It's true that, isn't it? You know, the emotional maturity and intelligence is something we definitely associate with people in positions of high responsibility, leadership positions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be leaders in terms of position. I mean, it could be, you know, family members, friends, you know, wherever you want to take these skills, you could take them, and team members within the team as well. So learning how to speak up when you feel that you need to speak up within the company.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it sounds like the program's kind of about gaining balance, and it's not kind of a work-life balance. It's a different kind of balance, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much about how to manage your time or, you know, what you're working with compared to or contrasting with what you're doing outside of work. It's really finding ways to deal with, you know, the struggles of life. And a lot of our life is spent in the workplace or with work colleagues. So it's leveraging whatever we can to make that a little bit easier, to navigate a little bit more skillfully.
Hello, a quick reminder from me that if you're enjoying our podcast series, why not become a member of the DMI so that you can enjoy loads more content from webinars and case studies to toolkits and more real-life insights from the world of digital marketing. Head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com/aheadofthegame to sign up for free. Now back to the podcast. This might sound like a daft question, but is search inside yourself essentially kind of open source? Like, can anyone just take it off the internet and apply it in their company?
So I don't think that you could take it off the internet and apply it into your company. You can certainly take some of the aspects of it. You can, you know, review the videos, watch, you know, some TED Talks and things like this about mindfulness and emotional intelligence. But the program itself is structured in such a way that it is, say, restricted material, copyrighted material. So you can't just take it off. SIY Global, so this organization that drives the program, they will train trainers to be able to deliver this material. So that way it's really consistent with their brand.
Yeah, they want to make sure it's not getting kind of bastardized and turned into something else. And
Exactly. And here at SAP, what we've done is we've taken that content, modified it a little bit to suit our particular situation. But the content is theirs. And what we also do at SAP is we will work with other companies to help them build a mindfulness practice and emotional intelligence training within their companies. So there is an external facing part of what we do at SAP.
That's very interesting. I mean, SAP, just give us a sense of the scale of that business. It's an absolutely massive global business, right?
Yeah, I think we're over 100,000 people now, over 29 billion euros in revenue in 2022, operating in hundreds of companies or hundreds of locations. So yeah, it's a massive, massive company. But at the same time, we're trying to cultivate a lot of connections between people, between teams. So even though it's very large, it's really well interconnected and networked, I would say.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I suppose what you're doing sounds like something a smaller, more nimble business would do. And it's great that obviously a big global company like this are thinking about programs. What's the size of the program, the SIY program just globally at SAP? Is this something that's happening all around the world there?
Yeah, we call it the SAP Global Mindfulness Practice. So we call it a practice because we continue to practice and learn. And the practice itself, we have teachers and trainers all around the world in different locations. I think we're at about 100 trainers. And the course itself that we teach, the Search Inside Yourself course, we have a waiting list of 10,000 people, something on that order of magnitude. So a good, uptick. So we're always looking for new trainers in the company and trying to continue to share. But yeah, it's a massive company.
It must be hard to find people who are willing to become trainers, right, alongside their day job.
Yeah. So speaking from my experience, it was a vetting process to become a trainer. So there were more people wanting to become trainers than the team could bring in. But as I said, there's a long waiting list, so they really wanted to try to get more trainers. But I'd say, you know, with such a large company across so many regions, countries, you'll always find a handful of people, I guess, but those handfuls become quite a big group when you put them all together. So it was a long vetting process to get to be an instructor. And, you know, my journey is continuing within the company, learning more and growing more. But you have to find definitely people that embody these kinds of practices, not just want to share information. So it could get a little tricky.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. And it's quite a responsibility for someone to take on, isn't it? You know, personally. So you've got to make sure they're kind of ready for that. I mean, are you given time for that within your day, within your kind of role then?
So like anything else, and you know, I'm sure many of the listeners could appreciate, it's always a bit of a negotiation. So this is what I call a side hustle. It benefits the company, but I find benefits for myself as well. So yes, I'm able to carve out some time. No, my deadlines and core role objectives don't change. So I make the time, I find the time, I do a little bit extra, whatever it is I need to do, because I find it's important. But yeah, from my leader's manager's point of view, my objectives don't change. This is really a side hustle, an intrapreneurial kind of activity for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Is this something you shout about quite a lot internally? And also, is it something, to what extent do you talk about the program externally?
Yeah, so when people think about SAP, I don't think mindfulness and emotional intelligence is the first thing that comes to mind. And it shouldn't be. Like I said, we have, you know, a number of products, and you know, we're always working to help make the world run better and improve people's lives. And in that vein, we do talk about mindfulness. We do talk about emotional intelligence. We do talk about the program, but I wouldn't say it's, you know, top of mind. I can say from personal experience, I have talked about this when interviewing people for roles within the company, explaining that, you know, not only is SAP a, you know, huge software company, but we have a lot of these kinds of activities, initiatives that you could take on if you're passionate about them, like this mindfulness program. I also speak to new hires. So in the first couple of weeks of being hired at SAP, everyone goes through boot camps. And I've spoken about the program in those sessions as well. But as a company, this is something that we see pockets of, say, encouragement and endorsement, but I wouldn't say it's something that we shout about. Internally, there are lots of activities ongoing. So in our practice, as I said, you know, I'm teaching this class, but we also do daily mindful moments. So 15 minutes a day, three times a day, some instructor somewhere is going to dial in with an SAP and lead a meditation practice. So some kind of mindfulness practice, a body scan, focusing attention, perhaps compassion, whatever it may be. And we have programs as well where we're introducing mindfulness to teams. And we introduced a number of other courses like Acts to Grow, where we talk about creating a vision for yourself and how you can plan to achieve those goals, all with the roots in mindfulness and emotional intelligence.
The way you describe it, it sounds like, yes, there is mindfulness practice there, clearly at the heart of it, but there's a more general kind of what sounds a little bit like it's getting towards just personal coaching, self-development, self-improvement coaching, essentially, that's on some level taking place at SAP, which, as you say, is a valuable way to retain staff, to improve staff, to get the most out of staff. So it does make a lot of sense, but it's just so interesting that this mindfulness bit is at the heart of it. Because I read, didn't you, you actually surveyed people, you survey people before and after the program, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we surveyed the people before the program just to get an idea of, you know, their level of knowledge of the topics of mindfulness and emotional intelligence. But also, let's say they're, you know, how stressed they're feeling, how engaged they feel with the company, those kinds of things. And post-class, we did a survey, I think it was about 650 people, and checked to see how they felt 4 weeks after the class and then a few weeks after that. And on every measure, things improved. So heightened sense of focus, feeling more creative, feeling more engaged with the company, more connected to their colleagues, and even less stress. So this is the course itself is 4 half days virtually, 2 days in person. And even with that little bit of coaching and information, people already get a heightened sense of engagement and lower level of stress. So definitely it's impactful. And it's also, as you say, it's leading to other kinds of programs that we have at SAP, other wellness programs, coaching and mentoring programs, things like this. So you could take your practices further. But this really is just a good taste of what you can start with in a mindfulness and emotional intelligence journey.
Cool. I mean, I'm not going to start trying to get, you know, extract the best bits of it out of you necessarily, but I'm curious, what do you think, what are the bits of the course, the program, that people find most memorable or talk about the most afterwards? Are there some particular parts of that people just really kind of loved?
Yeah, I mean, we do give some practical tips as well. So in terms of what the program offers and what the practice offers, being able to recognize what's going on inside of you, leveraging that, being able to manage that emotional data, using that in conversations. So active listening skills, you know, things like this get built up. But then how to work with your manager, how to have a good one-on-one session, how to work with customers, how to, you know, get yourself in the zone to be ready to be creative. Those kinds of things really resonate. And we leave people with a lot of tips and tricks. So, you know, taking a minute to arrive before you start a meeting is a really simple thing. Taking three breaths and identifying, you know, what's important right now when you feel a little bit lost. Those practical things, I think, are what people take away most.
Yeah, I suppose so. That does make a lot of sense. That's really interesting. Do you have a sort of daily mindfulness practice or anything like that?
I do. I wouldn't say it's daily. Definitely part of, you know, what I've been trying to do is also embody a lot of the things that we talk about. So it's very difficult to encourage people or be an ambassador about the topic of mindfulness if I'm not practicing myself. So yeah, I do have a routine. I try to take a couple of minutes before starting the day. So it's usually a beginning of the day kind of thing. We have a dog in the family, so mindful walking as well. So anything that you do with intention, with awareness, with consciousness, that's how I bring mindfulness into my day. Maybe not obviously, but I do use it as well in, you know, while at work in different contexts and catch myself recognizing that I am practicing what I preach.
Yeah, but I think that is definitely crucial. Because I think it's just hearing you talk about it and knowing, personally, like I know people who are, you know, kind of engaged with this kind of thing, both religiously and secularly. There's two sides to it, isn't there? That there's kind of a daily routine of essentially what in the Ayurvedic traditions is meditation of some sort at certain times of the day. But then there's also, like you say, like sort of contextual, circumstantial things like before a meeting or deal with an anxiety moment in this way. Am I right there that there's kind of two sides to it?
Yeah, for sure. The way that we talk about it is that there's two ways of, say, cultivating these kinds of things. One is dedicated, like going to the gym, like taking a class, like, you know, really practicing. And then there's some integrated practices. So things that you could do anytime during the day, a little incognito if it's not something that you want to share openly. But definitely, you know, taking some dedicated time to practice. So, you know, really focusing on your breath, for example, and, you know, counting to 10 before you say something that you shouldn't.
That would be great if that became adopted globally by everyone.
Exactly. And that's the point. And that's exactly why we're trying to do this within SAP. I mean, how many times do you send an email that you regretted and you have this sinking feeling of, oh my God, what have I just done?
Yeah.
Those reactions are emotional and natural and normal, and everybody has them. Realizing that first, the world isn't actually going to come crashing down on you is important, but then also that, you know, you're human and this happens to everybody and it's not just about you is a really insightful way to look at, say, failures in that kind of context and building your resilience.
Is there a lot of anger in the workplace, do you think?
Yeah, definitely anger can be an issue. And you can see that come, develop in different ways. Anger at different teams, anger at, you know, customers, although, you know, that should never happen, but of course it can. So you see this show up in different ways and recognizing, you know, that you're getting angry, that your blood is boiling, your heart is pumping, your breath is getting shorter. I'm about to do something, say something, type something that is out of anger. And maybe that's not the most skillful way to handle the situation. Maybe it is, but to recognize that that's what's going on and take the conscious decision to make the conscious choice, that's what we're trying to promote and explain to people. So all of the emotions play into it.
Yeah, because as you sort of hinted at there, it's a lot about mindfulness is a lot about having a little bit of objectivity about your own emotions, and rather than being completely carried away and consumed by, let's say, anger, you can actually sort of slightly separate from it and see that it's happening and go, actually, no, I'm just reacting to this like any normal person would, but I need to be the grown-up here and not create more negative ramifications and actually take a minute to just cool my jets and do the more... the more grown-up thing.
Yeah, exactly. Thing. Exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that's great. Again, I love the fact that someone like SAP is taking that stuff seriously. But SAP is a massive global company. They've got very large resources. And a lot of our listeners are from small to medium-sized businesses. What would you say to those people in smaller businesses, ways that they could apply some of the things that you've learned implementing this program at SAP?
Yeah, so I have actually gone into a smaller company. There were, I think, about 8 people, 10 people at the time to talk about mindfulness and emotional intelligence, to explain, you know, what some of the benefits are, how you can apply it. So not taking the full program, say, but just talking about, you know, what we're talking about here, that learning how to identify what's going on, being a little more self-aware, how to manage those emotions, how to leverage that in terms of empathy and leadership, those things are common regardless of the size of the company. And that group, I mean, they loved it. They asked me to come back for another session. I've also, you know, talked about these kinds of topics before I joined SAP, you know, listening skills, communication skills, a little bit of storytelling skills, all of that kind of stuff was part of what I was doing before. Now I've gotten the platform that I can use with a little more formality, I guess, a little more grounding that helps me and helps those people that I'm talking to see the benefits in a different light. But all of these things that we're talking about, it's not a big company kind of issue, or these aren't big company kind of issues. They're day-to-day issues, regardless of the size. And what,
yeah, they're all made very personal,
very personal,
individualized. Very personal. And it's not about teams of 50 people. It's about you, the individual.
Yeah, exactly. And perhaps in a smaller company, you can implement a large-scale program. But I think you can talk to people about taking a minute to arrive into a meeting before starting the meeting. So, you know, our bodies, our faces now virtually might be in the room, but our minds are somewhere else. We're thinking about the task that we just finished. We're thinking about what we're going to do next. We might even be thinking about something completely different outside of work. And that's also normal and natural. But maybe as a group, before you start the meeting or personally, you just take a couple breaths. You take a minute to fully arrive into the meeting. And that's not just for 100,000 person companies. That's, you know, down to a personal level.
No, of course. It's for, well, anyone doing anything, isn't it? It may seem like an odd question, but just as you were talking there, I was thinking, do you ever get people kind of arrive at this material and go, oh, cool, hacks, like these are kind of power hacks to become more powerful, and maybe you get some kind of Wolf of Wall Street type characters that arrive at the program and like, right, okay, yes, level me up so I can be more of a powerful corporate beast.
Yeah.
In the workplace. Absolutely. And sort of co-opt it a little bit and down that kind of American Psycho type path, or is that not a big problem?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, these are skills that you're learning. And like any skill, you know, depending on how you want to use it, you could use it for, you know, quote unquote goods. You could use it for bad. You could use it to motivate, but you could also use it to manipulate. Like anything that you do with emotions and working with people, sharing information with people, marketing to people, you can absolutely use these techniques in a way that benefits you but may not benefit someone else, but hopefully we're also teaching people about compassion and doing the right thing, along with the skills themselves. So we're trying to wean away from that.
So it's all, just to stop there, it's all sort of, yes, it's all framed around you, the individual, but the wider context is this makes this a better place to work for everyone.
Exactly, exactly. And more productive. So yes, better place to work. People are more engaged. They feel less stressed. They work better with customers. And that brings, you know, more revenue, more productivity, more money into the company. There is a red thread through this. It's not always easy to see, but it's there.
Interesting. You know, because of your background, your work in marketing, I'm assuming you're fairly tuned into the unique stresses and anxieties, etc., that marketers commonly have. Have you noticed patterns, particularly, because I'm thinking of our listeners again, you know, digital marketers, a lot of them. Have you noticed patterns, the sort of common anxieties and stresses that marketers have?
So I've dealt with several marketing teams at several different companies, customers of SAP. I wouldn't say I see threads or themes that are always common, other than the general, you know, people are stressed and there are deadlines to meet, things like this. But what I can say is when I've delivered these kinds of sessions to marketing teams, what comes out quite often is a need to find a way of doing the right work, getting things done while being stressed and under pressure and, you know, not having all of the information, all of those things that come into it. So I do see a need for people ask about how to be more creative, for example. So how to be more creative as a marketer? Well, your listeners probably already know you have to be in the right headspace to do that kind of work, to be creative versus the right headspace.
And that's a stress in itself, the pressure to be yes. creative, right? The pressure to just turn up and
no, for sure. And maybe you need a couple seconds, minutes of, you know, opening your mind up to all the possibilities that are out there. Maybe simulating that feeling when you're in the shower and that great idea just pops in your head. So getting yourself into a mind state that's more creative takes a bit of practice. And so I've spoken to marketing teams about doing that before, using the skills that we're teaching, building on the emotional intelligence attributes to be more creative. The other area that I'd say I've spoken to marketing teams about is the use of language. You mentioned, you know, writing copy, part of what marketers need to do from time to time. The words that you use, the language that you use, the tone that you use, all of those things play into the emotions that you're driving into that customer base that you're marketing to. So those things matter. And having a larger emotional vocabulary, what is, you know, anger versus rage versus being furious, what is it that you want to try to describe can help you be more effective as a marketer. So expanding your emotional vocabulary can be a useful tool for you too.
Yeah, there's definitely something about marketing that requires a kind of emotional intelligence and a lot of empathy, because what you're really trying to do is read the audience or the customer's minds, and you're trying to work out what's in their heads and what can I say to them in a very crowded digital space or any space that will resonate with them and tell them that, you know, they ultimately need to take notice of me because I've got something for them. So there's a lot of that theory of mind stuff of really just understanding other people. And I think mindfulness probably really helps with that.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it very well, that as marketers, you're trying to find a way to be empathetic, understand what the marketplace is thinking, but really what they're feeling and how to motivate them. And how can you do that if you're not even in tune with what your own emotional state is?
I think so. And certainly the more you're wrapped up in stress, anxiety, depression, anger, the more you become sort of trapped in your own issues and your own bubble, and that all becomes a bit harder, I think. So Definitely.
Yeah. And like it or not, those, you know, if you're in that emotional state of, you know, anger, frustration, et cetera, it's going to come out in your work, in your copy, in your, you know, social media, whatever you're going to do. You may not intend for it to happen, but there, you know, it's going to slip in if you're not aware.
What do you think when people frame creativity sometimes as benefiting from some of these extreme emotions like anger and depression?
They're useful. I mean, you need to be able to leverage all of that emotional range to do what you need to do. Anger as an emotion isn't necessarily bad. How you execute on that anger or how that manifests in the world, that's where things could be termed maybe good or bad. But if you're angry about something, that might drive you to make a change, that might drive you to have a conversation because you feel so strongly about whatever that topic is. So I'd say you need to use that full emotional range, but be prepared for the consequences of how you activate that emotional range.
Yeah, I get that. You know, with programs like this, I always wonder if the people, there's certain people who are just really drawn to programs like this. And they're the people that are best at helping themselves. Now, I'm not saying you are a full, like, kind of, you know, mental health program. I do get that. but do you know what I'm saying? When you set up something like this, it's the people who are kind of already best at kind of serving their needs and helping themselves through things that will be drawn towards it. And actually, the hardest to reach people can be the people who need it most.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Do you think about that much? And how do you sort of try and win over some of those other people that are maybe a bit harder to reach?
So definitely everything that we do, it's an invitation to come and practice, to come and learn, to try to improve yourself. And absolutely, if you're not in that frame of mind to look at that material, you're not going to sign up. How do we advocate? Honestly, we bring it back to the science. We talk to, as a company, you know, we have a wide range of different roles. So we bring it back to the science. We bring it back to how it's been proven that these kinds of programs can help you in whatever your role is. We try to have, let's say, a one-hour discussion with the leadership team about what mindfulness and emotional intelligence is with their organizations, and see if there's some uptick from that. And I personally seen quite a lot of uptick from that, from those kinds of sessions. So we advocate, we broadcast, we communicate all internally within the company. But you're right in saying that most of the people that sign up for such programs are people who already have a bit of this frame of mind. Maybe they're a little curious about what they could do next. But I have also had a number of skeptics join the classes, join the sessions. And that's always, interesting, good debates.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it must be really interesting guiding someone through their first ever kind of body scan or breath meditation or something like that, and seeing how they experienced it and how they felt afterwards.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. So I've given those kinds of things virtually now for quite a while, but also in person. And you can get a sense, even virtually, when people are disengaging. Obviously, when they have their cameras on, you can feel it or you can see it in their, you know, in their posture. But you can even hear it in their tone of voice. And it opens up the door to have more conversations.
That's really interesting. I mean, I could definitely go down that rabbit hole of talking to you about that stuff, I think, for a long time, but I can see time ticking. What would be your top tips? Maybe just to make a little start on improving their mindfulness in their marketing work or in their work.
Yeah. I mean, some of the easy tips, one is one of those things that I already mentioned, to consider taking a minute to arrive. So even if the whole group is not, you know, ready to do something like that, you yourself take a couple seconds. I mean, call it a minute, but it could just be a couple seconds to reorient yourself. Close your eyes, find a posture that feels relaxed and alert. you know, take a couple breaths, settle in, and focus on what it is that you want to do next. Sometimes it feels like we don't have time to do that, that we're jumping from meeting to meeting or activity to activity, which is often true. But if you are doing that jump, you're probably not engaged in what you're doing anyhow for that first minute or two. So take that time for yourself. That's one tip that I always share with people. Another would be to build a bit of empathy. I mean, especially for marketing teams, as we've been saying, learning how other people are feeling what they're feeling, getting in touch with what's going on with them. One-on-one or team-to-team, yes, in your marketing department, but broadly to your customer base, the people that you're marketing to, requires a bit of training and thought and process. So again, take a couple seconds, even if it's just three breaths, and think about what that person on the other end of your message is going to absorb. How might they be feeling? What might they be thinking? Where might they be? Really develop this image of who this person might be. And that might be able to help you connect a little bit better, to shift your connection with them a little bit more strongly. And then I'd say a third thing is, you know, somewhere around taking three breaths and considering what's important right now, especially when you're stressed or feeling overwhelmed and you need to prioritize and think about what that next thing is going to be. Take three breaths. And with the first one, settle the mind a little bit, like I was saying before. With the second, say, soften in the body, just relax a little. And with that third breath, say, this is what is important right now, and then do that. So those would be my top three.
Very good. I could probably benefit from that last one, particularly myself, I think. It sounds like the running theme with a lot of these things is about breaking the cycle of mindlessly rushing around, like, you know, like the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland, always late. And that character is a caricature of a working person who's just rushing from one thing to another. And they would say they haven't got time, but they actually do have time. It's a pure perception thing on their part. And actually building in that time improves the quality of what they're doing within their time. And it's something that it's a cycle, I think, that all this stuff helps to break. I think that's one of the key benefits from my point of view.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it really well. We're always rushing from one thing to another. The things feel overwhelming all around us. And trying to find those moments to take a pause, to really think about what it is that we need to do, want to do, how we want to engage, it's necessary. And it does help us feel a little bit lighter, a little bit stronger.
Great. Well, look, it's been great to chat to you. Really has, Andrew. Very, very interesting what you do. Hopefully a sign of, you know, growth in of mindfulness in the kind of corporate world, really. Clearly everyone wins. There's no downside to it. And it seems to be a very efficient way of improving the quality of work and the quality of the lives of staff. So why not? So yeah, been really good, and happy to talk about it here and educate our listeners about that. One last question. Where can people connect with you online?
The easiest way to connect with me is over LinkedIn. You can find me. I'll provide the profile. And reach out anytime. Love to connect and talk about mindfulness and emotional intelligence whenever I can.
Very cool. We will do indeed, Andrew. Thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about transforming your marketing career through certified online training, head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com. Thanks for listening.